Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, where we meet with leaders from across the procurement community to discuss innovative and strategic ideas. Because when it comes to procurement, every decision matters. Hello, and welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast. I'm Alex Stonehouse, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Bernadette Lowney. And we are joined today by Dave and Kara from the Springfield Public School System. They're here to talk to us about a variety of issues, from their implementation of the e-bidding system to how they handled the initial pandemic response, all the way into how the school district and the procurement department is handling the 2020 and 2021 school system. So to kick us off, I know that we had a little pre-conversation about you all implementing an e-bidding system in January of 2020 before the pandemic hit and we even knew it was coming. Can you give us a little idea or talk us through why that was such an important investment?
Sure. Well, I think that I can speak for both Dave and I whenever I say that we're very proud of the district's IT department. Because they keep up with the latest trends. We have very strong systems in place. So I feel like we were able to adapt a little bit easier because we have those strong systems. So our goal really with implementing the e-bidding system was to really streamline the process and allow everything to be a little bit easier on the vendor's end as well for submitting their responses electronically. So the system that we chose to go with is very robust. We were really impressed with the capabilities, and it also allowed for better standardization with not only our processes and our documents, but with evaluation. So there were a lot of factors that we considered. We also feel like that it holds, especially when we're doing a request for proposal, that holds our evaluation team and committee to a higher standard. It also allows for us to have more defendable and justifiable awards. So those were some of the things that we were really looking towards when we decided that we would go to an electronic system like this. The other piece that we're utilizing that has been really, really great is the contract management piece. So that's allowed us to really track our term contracts and make sure that we have our reminders whenever we need to be looking at renewals and that sort of thing. So that's why we felt like it was a really good investment for the department and for the district as a whole.
And talk about incredible timing in terms of the implementation, because no one had even heard of COVID-19 when you guys implemented this. What is that time process like? So if it was implemented in January, how many months ahead, you know, are you guys bringing this vendor on and then getting ready to launch in January?
So we had quite a bit of communication with the vendor community when we decided to go this route. So we reached out via email and let them know prior to our go live date that this is what we were doing, and they would want to go out and register to receive notifications. So we worked really hard that when we hit that go live date, we were ready to roll. And it was really nice that between January and March that we had bids out on the street, and we were able to kind of get our feet wet with it so that we had more experience when all of this really blew up. We had some work, some experience under our belt, and we were ready to roll.
Yeah, that must have been a really nice feeling to know that you had that sort of backup where you could be at home or you could be in different locations and still be able to access everything that you needed to. Did it really feel like that specific technology of the e-bidding system had a huge impact on your ability to communicate with each other and with suppliers once the pandemic did hit?
Yeah, I think so. Not all of us were in the office, but we were all in constant communication. And it was a learning system. You know, with any new system, you learn things as you go, and you have to make changes to the processes that you have in place. And we're still doing that today. We learn something new with almost every solicitation. So I think all of us working together on, hey, I experienced this. What can we do to keep this from happening next time if it wasn't a positive experience? Or, hey, I really think we could tweak this and it would work a little bit better for us. And we were in constant communication with that.
Yeah, one of the other things that it helped us with is when we were initially, the COVID took place and they locked down our buildings, it still allowed us to communicate with our vendors and for them to participate in our processes without them having to come into the buildings and just have to deal with all that. So I think it kind of assured them that they could continue to work with us and have work, and it protected our people from visitors coming into the building. So there were just a lot of benefits to all that.
Yeah, that's actually a decent segue. And one of the fascinating things about sort of how the pandemic played out in a lot of different places is it sort of went differently for people who may have huge warehouses or may have relationships with surrounding governments or places who were reliant on just-in-time delivery where they have nothing in a warehouse and they don't have relationships with people around them. Can you all speak to at all the sort of how that went for you? Back in March or April, like what were the big purchases that you all were trying to hustle and buy? And then how did that go with your surrounding government, with your other school districts, anything like that?
Yeah, I'll jump in there, Kara. We have a fairly large warehouse here, so we were able to position ourselves to bring in large quantities of items if we could find them. You know, when it first started, you couldn't get hand sanitizer from anybody. So we actually worked with a distillery to get alcohol brought in that we used as a hand sanitizer. So that's kind of where it started. Then our next challenge was, okay, what are the things that we're going to have? And mask was obviously big. A lot of the vendors were only dealing in really large quantities. So you couldn't just say, give me a couple hundred. You needed to be ordering hundreds of thousands. So having a warehouse allowed us to be able to get those large quantities that we needed. And, you know, it was a very difficult process. You'd think you'd have something coming in and then things would change with the supplier end, and it didn't. So we just kind of struggled with that challenge. But then we worked with our administration, and there was a list of things that they provided us that we need to get. And we worked on that, you know, as best we could.
Yeah, it was such an interesting time to kind of, I mean, obviously we wish that scenario had never come up in the first place, but to watch how it played out for a lot of different places. And you saw, I'd say probably thousands, if not tens over hundreds of thousands of new suppliers pop up who were claiming, oh, we can make masks or we can make this, just trying to get there, make 10 grand or make 50 grand out of the crisis. But what was interesting then too, is you saw a lot of people after realizing, oh, maybe we shouldn't go to this random supplier who we've never heard of, who just seems to have shown up out of nowhere in 2020. And they were actually able to kind of lean back on their existing suppliers who maybe were doing it something different for them in this scenario, but at least you knew you could kind of trust them. So like I've heard stories of people getting water bottle deliveries from like their, the person who usually delivers their like paper or who usually delivers their machinery or something, like something that has nothing to do with the water, but they were set up with a decent supply chain to actually be able to pull that off. So it was definitely interesting times there.
Yeah, I think that's where the online bidding system kind of helped us as well, because it opened up the avenue to a lot of vendors that we weren't familiar with, and we were able to seek out some of those big players in the market that were able to provide us with things.
Dave, you had mentioned that, you know, the administration was giving you guys that list of things you guys need to get. In those kind of like March, April, early days, what was the balance between the in-person supplies that you guys need, the hand sanitizer, the masks, and then also having to adjust to the home learning of maybe some of those technology needs? What was that balance looking like? And then what were the biggest challenges that you guys faced?
Yeah, we initially were operating under the impression that school was going to continue. So we were trying to get things that we were going to need for school to continue as it was going. Then we finally came to the realization that school is going to shut down. So then we had to transition to, okay, all of these things, we probably aren't going to need as many as we thought, because now the learning is going to take place at home. We work closely with our IT department to determine, okay, what do we need to flip this scenario and be able to have learning at home. So it kind of moved from PPE stuff to technology, Chromebooks, hotspots, all of those types of items. So there was a lot going on, and we've made it through it, and, you know, we're a lot better off for it. And I think a lot of people now realize that learning can basically take place anywhere. It's just having the plan in place to get you where you need to be.
And you all have a hybrid education plan with some in-person and some homeschooling or digital learning, is that correct?
Yes, we're 4 days in school right now. Wednesdays is kind of a cleaning day. Yeah, there's been talk that high schools would be coming back to school, and I believe it happened this past Monday. And then, you know, where it goes from there is, you know, that's where our administration will work with the Greene County Health Department to determine what the future looks like.
Thinking about the beginning of the school year and everything that was under consideration at the time, if you think back, all right, that's, you're looking at summer starts in May or June. That's when we saw a lot of the kind of spikes happening in different regions of the country. Were there any road bumps or things you didn't expect that happened on the procurement side of things in those early stages in like July, August, when you're preparing for everybody to come back?
The challenge was just making sure that we had the core items that were needed in order to start school. Being as large as we are, you know, you have everybody wanting different things. So we had to kind of get everybody thinking on the same page that, that we didn't need to have everybody buying different stuff. So okay, here are the items that are available. Which items do you need here? And this is kind of the list that we're operating under. As school started and people started seeing what unique items they would need, then it became a challenge. Okay, is this something we want to add, or do we want to stay with what we currently have? And then I'll give you an example. Some of our music classes needed, or they found a special mask that would allow them to continue to sing. And so we weren't aware that this mask even existed, but they did. So then we had to start a process. Is this something we want to look at district-wide and make it available? So that was the challenge. People would find things, and everybody wanted all these different items, and it was becoming more difficult to try to keep everybody satisfied.
And the balance of safety being the priority, but then also if you can allow the kids to be able to sing in music class, that also enhances their education and their experience so much more. So it's definitely kind of a juggling act there, I can imagine.
Yeah, we worked closely with our administration who developed the initial list, and then they were in touch with our health services department. They would actually tell us, yes, we can move forward with this. So we still had a process in place as to what were approved items.
Yeah, that really seems to be at the core of the public sector organizations that have handled this the best, whether it's a state or a county or a school district, is that communication piece, right? So the people who just tried to struggle through it and grunt and not tell anybody what they were doing or not ask for anything or not communicate, they seem to be the ones that kind of fell behind. But the way that you described talking to different departments, talking to your leadership within the district, like just straight up being like, this is where we're at. This is what we need. Here's our must-haves. Here's our nice-to-haves. That kind of communication seems to be the difference between places that are really handling this pretty well and then places that are maybe struggling a little bit right now.
One thing I would like to add to that was unexpected for me, you know, we've never been through anything like this, and we were a facilitator of CARES funds for some of the private schools in the area. And so we helped them with purchases for IT, for cleaning supplies and services, and things like that, that I really hadn't thought about until those requests started coming through. So that was a way that we were able to help some of the schools in our area as well.
Can you share a little bit more about that? So how exactly did that work?
We have a department who's kind of dedicated to monitoring the funds, and they would submit requisitions just like they would for district funds. And we would follow our practices and procedures to try to source the technology items and that sort of thing. And we're still working on some of that. So it's continued on through this whole process.
Do you have any tips that you would give to another school district who's planning to sort of make the shift that you guys are trying to make right now of going from a little bit less remote to coming back into the classroom? Is there any extra stuff you had to do to prepare physically to have people come back?
I think it's important to reach out and see what other districts are doing. You know, not just districts, but public agencies and as a whole. I know that as Dave and I were going through this, if a question came up, I didn't hesitate to reach out to others in our profession, other agencies, to see how they were handling things, because it impacts us all. We're not alone in this. And being able to build off of what other people are doing to see if it, you know, is something we can consider, I think it's really important.
And as part of that, do you tap into some of the communities like within NIGP and organizations like that as part of that?
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate at volunteering for NIGP. I've built some really, really great connections all over the United States and Canada. Several of them are in public education. So I don't hesitate at all to shoot an email or to pick up the phone and call and ask, hey, what are you guys doing? So some of them I'm on weekly communications with. And so we shoot ideas back and forth. One agency in particular, they're just looking at going back. And so there's lots of questions about things that we did. So having that network, I think, is super important.
Yeah, that's one thing. So I've been in the procurement space for only a couple of years at this point, but one of the things that has been consistent and has been really interesting and awesome to see is that most people, especially people that are part of one of the larger organizations, really do see their knowledge or the relationship with other people in procurement at not as a zero-sum game. So they're totally willing to share. Like, if the information is locked up in their own head, it's like wasted, and they want to get it out. They want to tell people what they know and what they've learned and help other people succeed. So and that's not true in every industry or in every profession. So it's really nice to see that. I mean, there's a lot of people on the other side too who are just eager to digest that information. There's so many complex things that I think people outside of procurement might not necessarily realize how complex of a job it is and how many moving parts there are and how many things that are going on. So that willingness to learn and continue to grow is I think, part of the profession almost.
I would maybe be interested in hearing, Kara, if there's any specific piece of advice you were able to get from, you know, another school district or something like that, that you were able to apply, or vice versa, that you think you were able to really help someone else with.
So Carrie Mathis in Florida she's not at a public school, but she has been a huge resource for me. I think being in Florida, they are more prepared for natural disasters. And I mean, nobody could have been prepared for COVID, but dealing with hurricanes and that sort of thing kind of gives them an edge up, because here in Missouri, I've been in public procurement since 2004. And the only thing that I could really relate this to is, I believe it was 2007, we had a very devastating ice storm here in Southwest Missouri, but I was not in a buyer role at the time. And so there were a lot of things that came into place with FEMA that I knew were requirements. And I just wanted to make sure I was clear on what those were. So it was really great. She set some time aside for Dave and I to ask questions. And it was really, really helpful. So for me, that would be the biggest one, the biggest example I can give.
And just being able to pick up the phone and have that 15 to 20 minute conversation versus maybe spending 2 hours trying to like navigate all of the things online and stuff like that. You get the answer faster and from someone who's actually gone through it. So that's really awesome.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, you look at our situation, we are the largest school district in the state of Missouri. And in Southwest Missouri, there are a lot of small districts and they may not have dedicated procurement people that do these things. So they're kind of really out there all by themselves, and for them to be able to pick up the phone and call anybody that can help them out, say, hey, where do we need to go here? We kind of pride ourselves in being able to provide that assistance when somebody needs it.
Dave, you had mentioned that for masks, for example, that you had to order in such large bulk. Was there a lot of that supply sharing happening? Was that some of the ways that you guys supported other school districts, or especially at that stage, was it more about making sure that we had enough to get through?
Yeah, initially it was, okay, what do I need to get R12 back up and running and being able to meet our needs? And then after that, governmental agencies, DESE got involved, and they said, okay, we do have a lot of these small surrounding school districts that don't have warehouses, don't have access to buy in bulk. How can we help those out? And they would then work on getting large quantities delivered to school districts that had warehouses, where then we could distribute those to the surrounding districts. They would come pick them up and we would make them available.
That's really great.
Yeah, it's so fascinating to just picture all of this going on behind the scenes. And like the average kid in the school or even the teachers maybe don't even realize how much is going on just every day to coordinate all that. So it's really fascinating. But is there anything that you all are kind of most proud of as a purchasing team, whether it's during the pandemic or just generally on how you all work and communicate together? And also, along with that, are there any big lessons that you'd want to share with our audience from your years in procurement?
I'm just proud of how the entire team stepped up and did whatever it took to get this accomplished. I don't think we really lacked any item that we needed in order to not be able to start school on time and have the proper safety and PPE things on hand. So we work really hard there. And now the challenge is, you know, as items are becoming more available, they want more. So how do you still stay focused on the core items we need to purchase? So that's our challenge right now. Somebody can go into Walmart, get a tub of Clorox wipes, and they say, well, why can't you get them? And I said, well, because I need 10,000 of them. Okay. It's there's a difference. And if you go to Walmart or Sam's, they say you can have one. So that's the challenge, is getting them to understand the great big picture. The supply chain is still broke. I don't know when it'll be back to normal. So that's where we're at with our current situation.
Yeah. And if you're at Costco buying hand sanitizer, you just drop the ball on 99 other things you need to purchase because you wasted an hour in line getting just the hand sanitizer. So
I would just add that as a team, I think it brought us closer together, even though we weren't all together in the office. We still were a team and a unit, and we were in constant communication with each other with phone calls, emails, text messages. Through all of this, it's brought us closer. And I think that, you know, very efficient, and it just showed that we can do our job here in the office remotely if necessary, and then we're still going to get the job done. And so I think that was a big takeaway for me, is that we faced the challenges, but we were still able to get the job done.
That's a great answer. And I know that's one of the fears everyone had when we kind of moved to the remote work environment was, are we going to feel disconnected from our colleagues? Are we going to not be able to communicate? And I actually weirdly feel like the Zoom environment has, like, you're staring people directly in the face. You're having like candid conversations because you're not worried about so-and-so overhearing you in the background or whatever. Like it's a very kind of honest and direct way of communication. And I know the other concern was like, oh, nobody's going to do any work. People are just going to go home and be in their bubble bath and making sandwiches and slacking off. And it's like, actually the opposite is almost true. Where like, if you don't do any work and you're remote, it's very clear you didn't do any work because you didn't send any emails, you didn't deliver any products, the stuff you were supposed to order never showed up. Whereas in the office, you can kind of poke around and make it look like you're busy and schmooze with your boss or whatever, but like that doesn't exist in a remote environment. So I'm glad to hear that you feel connected and like it's been sort of a bittersweet, I'm sure, but in this way, at least a positive experience for you all. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today on this episode. I think it really turned out great, and people are going to get a lot of useful information out of this. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. See you.
Right. Yeah, thank you both. Guys.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Decisions That Matter. This podcast is brought to you by Procurated, the leading supplier evaluation tool for procurement professionals across the U.S. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen. See you again next time.